Hi, everybody. Welcome back to From Illumination to Innovation Podcast.
Yeah.
Woo. And you might be wondering, why are you dressed this way? Well, our episode today, we're taking a thematic approach to employee experience. And, you know, we've had our HR series. We're at the third episode of our HR series. Episode one was HR, the history of HR. Episode two, is HR your friend? And now, the employee experience. So I'm your co-host, Shaniqua Brown, and here is the fabulous Stephanie Gray.
Hey, everybody. And in case you haven't guessed, my theme for the day, my corporate culture theme for the day is cool hats. So since I'm the corporate mystic, I decided that I would start with my awesome purple witch hat. And
I love that you're going to have multiple hats here.
I don't know if anybody can guess Shaniqua's theme. Do y'all know what it is?
My look today is sales rep who won the all-inclusive trip. I'm clearly in my Hawaiian shirt and ready for vacation. Are you ready?
Yeah, the only thing she needs is her margarita.
I have a little fizzy drink, so I think that'll work.
So why are we here talking about employee experience in the middle of an HR series?
Well, I think that's actually, it's a perfect spot for it, right? Yeah. Because employees are at the center of the business, you know? So here, we're looking to highlight the importance of employee experience, how it ultimately mirrors the customer experience, and just illuminating how important employee experience if you, a business leader, want to be successful.
And so I want to bring just, you know, I'm going to read off my paper because it's what I do best. I recently actually got certified in customer experience specifically, right? So I have a CXPA certification. And I did that because it's I don't actually work specifically in that space, but I work with a lot of business owners. And I think understanding the value of nurturing the customer experience is critical when you're developing your culture and developing your business ethos and really trying to understand how you want to express your own values. But in the middle of, you know, that culture experience and that customer experience lives a very, very important entity, and that's the employee. And so I took this from a website. It's Clear Action website, and it's run by Lynn Hunsaker. And she I used her program to help train me for my CXPA, but it just straight from her site. What is employee experience? And employee experience is what an employee experiences.
Ding, 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 ding. Ding, ding, ding.
So it's their perceptions about how well their employer supports their intended outcomes. Mm-hmm. And the employee experience is measured by employees' realities versus their expectations. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that we take note of that, is that an employee's reality is their experience.
Right.
Right.
And I think it's really important to understand, like, we understand the customer cycle or the buyer cycle, right? The full life cycle. The employee experience starts from the prospective employee, right? Where you would, how do you want to advertise your roles? How do you showcase your employer branding? How do you attract talent and bring them through the process? And then it goes all the way through to when the said employee leaves. And to your point, touching on every facet of the employee, like what they touch, what they contribute. Like, so I think that's super important to understand that just like we have that customer experience life cycle, we also have that employee experience life cycle, and they're mirrored.
Yeah, they are. As a matter of fact, the only other point I took from her site that I really wanted to bring into this conversation is the relationship, that direct impact on the customer experience. And she says there's this symbiotic relationship between good customer experience and good employee experience. And really, when we think about what the customer is doing, The customer is the one that is paying for our salaries. Mm-hmm. They are the ones that are paying for our budgets. They are running our business. And so recognizing that from an employee perspective, mm-hmm. that relationship is a very intimate relationship. Mm-hmm. If we aren't taking care of our employees, they're not going to be able to take care of our customers the way that we need them to. And by virtue, the customer is not going to take care of the business. So it really is a very like clear cycle in terms of how successful that business can really be and the ROI and the value, the long-term value that the business can build into each one of those relationships with the employee and then out to their customer.
That, like what you're saying, rings so true to a recent experience I had as a customer. I won't name the entity because I think that won't look good on that.
We don't have to. We can use generalization.
So I go into this establishment and I have this experience with several of the employees where when they're not helping, I can see that they're bombarded with other work. So I'm empathetic to that because I've had that experience as well. I've worked in retail, so I know what that could be like. And but by the time, like 30 minutes later, by the time they were able to help me, they were just so frustrated and they had, I would ask a question and they like didn't know. And, you know, I understand that they don't know, but then I could look right, there's like a policy paper like right next to them. So I'm reading it. So I'm like getting information from it without their help. And I love that experience. One, I immediately researched like what was like their salary because I was just curious. And they looked like not only were they experiencing something at work, but like maybe something else was going on in their personal lives. Mm-hmm. And when I did research on their salary, I was like, yeah, no wonder. It's expensive for us. Like the inflation is high, right? Mm-hmm. Inflation is high. And with their salary, they can't take care of themselves. If they can't take care of themselves, how are they going to show up to take care of your customer?
That's right.
And then how likely is it the customer, will want to come back? So if I don't go back, then their salaries aren't being paid. Mm-hmm. You go out of business. And it's not just, I think we focus on like businesses going out, like not existing anymore versus right. the impact it has on the community.
Absolutely.
So that's what you were saying rings so true and is very important. And the reason why companies should get on the bandwagon of employee engagement, employee experience.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, if everything's about the bottom line, which, you know, according to, you know, our corporate structure, it is.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Then it costs a lot of money to obtain a client, a customer, right? Once you have a customer, maintaining that relationship and developing that relationship, over time, it can actually return value to you. And, mm-hmm. you know, again, you know, in CX, they refer to that as annuities, customer annuities. That over time, that customer is sharing your story with their friends. They're making purchases without you having to market to them. They're developing loyalty in a relationship, right? And so that it's really still true with your employees. It costs a lot of money to bring an employee on board and to train them and to nurture them and to get them into a space of being able to support that customer. And whether that employee, I think this is really important too, and I think it's something that gets overlooked a lot in this space, is whether you are an employee that is like directly, you know, you're maybe in sales or customer service and you're constantly in the face of the customer and directly interacting with them, or whether you are working in the back office or you're doing something that is very far removed, it is critical that everyone in an organization understands the impact that of the work they do on that customer relationship.
Yes.
How it improves that customer's experience. Right. And so I don't think that leaders think about that enough. And it really goes a lot to what I think starts to create disengagement, for employees to feel disacknowledged or not recognized, and to just simply not even know what their purpose is, you know, like what their real function is beyond the actual tactics of the job, you know, which we know people need to know, to really, for people to really thrive, they need more than that. They need more than just like, here, do this and don't ask questions.
So when in my past as a recruiter, I would say that it's important that I understand what it is that you do. Working with the hiring manager, my first conversation with them, the first meeting, is really focused on understanding the like how your like your team contributes in your department, and then most importantly, the overall organization. Because when I'm speaking with prospective employees, it's imperative that I can convey that to them before they even get into the door. Because like we established, employee experience starts at the prospect space. So if coming into the organization, they're unsure about what exactly that they do, how they contribute to the overall success and health of the company, then you are playing catch up from the beginning. So with employee experience, I think it's important to highlight, and why, for me, why I think it goes well into our HR series is talking about how we approach talent acquisition. Mm-hmm. It then flips it from, well, they should want to work here. I mean, we're X, Y, and Z company. No, you should want to show them why they would want to work here. Just like you, with the customer, you're selling the customer from prospect all the way through acquisition, right? So you're selling these prospective employees on why they should spend their time, energy, and talents with your organization. So that is super important. That's important to me, like what I want to get across in this conversation. It's about the employee starts before they're even an employee.
I would very much agree. And I would even think sometimes, in situationally speaking, employees might aspirationally look at an organization before the organization even recognizes that they're prospecting them at all.
Right.
And, you know, that setting of expectations versus meeting the reality,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that sometimes that is where there's big gaps, where, you mm-hmm. know, the company is looking at the recruiting process as a marketing exercise and not really taking it to the depth of, are we expressing our core values? Are we expressing our values in a way that's transparent and truly authentic? And do the people who are, you know, looking at us and wanting to come into our environment, do they feel like they can align to that? You know, right. Does that work for them? And does that work for us? Because mm-hmm. The more that organizations can bring clarity and then accountability to that employee experience,
mm-hmm.
right? The more truth there is in it. I believe that it again, allows for more innovation, allows, you know, you create just a stronger culture as a whole. And allows you to expand, you know, versus just feeling crappy and diminished.
Right. Well, and it sounds like then when you have clarity in the core values, not only what you do, who you serve, but how you do it and why you do it, not just having that in like HR specifically, but then expanding that to every department in the organization, going back to what you said, everyone understanding what we do, how we do it, why we do it, then that will just create exceptional customer experience, right?
Absolutely.
You will then see lots of success because if I'm taken care of, if I understand the mission, if I understand who I need to work with to accomplish that mission, I have clear parameters of like what type of autonomy I have. I am excited to, you know, see this client issue through, or excited to go get new business. Or if I'm, you know, in finance, I understand why, you know, this marketing director is coming and asking for more budget. I can empathize and we can have an actual conversation about, hey, here's how we can make this work versus yelling at each other or creating like division within the organization.
Absolutely. No, I think so. It's interesting when we talk about like, we just actually had an episode out a few weeks ago on culture crafting, mm-hmm. right? And when we think about employees, I think that's where we sometimes think about culture crafting from the perspective of being really contrived, like Hat Day, or, you know, And so I was doing some reading on this. I found this article through Built In, and it was sort of a do's and don'ts of like creating a positive culture. And there were a lot of like obvious things on there that I think we would recognize, like, you know, do have integrity, do mm-hmm. create a culture of trust, you know, things like that. But there were things that stood out that I thought were worth exploring from the context of, you know, one of their things was, you know, be lighthearted. Oh. And, you know, and I agree. I think that, you know, being able to like have a culture where people can be lighthearted and, you know, perhaps Crazy Hat Day isn't so contrived in that context of just allowing people to be playful and expressive. But also, you know, just what does a lighthearted culture allow for employees, and what does it free up for them, you know, when you bring that sort of energy into your environment?
Have you ever experienced a lighthearted culture?
I have. I feel like I have nurtured a lighthearted culture.
Yeah, my lighthearted, well, my teams have been lighthearted, whether
microcultures is what I call them.
Microculture, yes.
Yeah. Sometimes the environment isn't, you sort of have to create that buffer for your team.
And I think that like being lighthearted, like you're saying, like theme days, like and even it for me is like not necessarily taking yourself too seriously, where you can like laugh at things, and perhaps that would make you blunders at work easier to like work through. I am so digging these silent changes. If you're listening to the podcast, you have to go over to our YouTube channel so you can experience the changing hats. They're great hats, by the way. Let us know which one's your favorite.
I'm a good corporate citizen and I took Hat Day seriously, okay?
Thank you. But like, I think like being able to laugh and have fun, right? I feel like one of the reasons why our podcast, like recording our podcast, is something that I look forward to is because it is lighthearted. We can laugh when we have a blunder. We can say, hey, we're going to cut that out because Shinigoya, you cannot get that out. I'm like, yes, thank you. You know, we can just have a good time. So I love that. That was like one of the like things to do.
It yeah. really jumped out at me as awesome.
Are there any more?
Well, one that I felt like I don't know if it's like, I agree with it. And then I also think it's controversial. And so it was social outings. And I had a lot of thoughts. I thought a lot of ways about social outings. And one, my very first thought was, you know, how does that work in really virtually distributed environments? Mm-hmm. You know, so, okay, we have social outings when we all work together. That's great. Mm-hmm. And then I thought about like work-life balance. And I know some people who just like want to get off work and just go, you know, go home. And so I thought, are these social outings that are happening during work hours or outside of work hours? Because that sort of makes a difference. Because if it's a social outing for the employee experience, so for example, like if the employees are going to go on a field trip.
I was just thinking that.
Yes. And they get to go and
during working hours.
Yeah, during working hours, like taking that time and investing. Because I think what happens and what I think often when, you know, whether we're creating, you know, Hat Day or these themed events, or we're trying to
vacation day, we're trying to
cultivate this, you know, organic expression, let people be themselves. But in reality, people don't really buy into that a whole bunch. They're still going to be guarded. They may wear the shirt. They may have, you know, not everybody's going to be like me and like win every single Halloween contest that they enter. Okay. But, you know, it's everybody's going to approach it sort of with their own sensibility. But when we put people in situations where they're just having an experience together, right? And the experience itself is sort of, you know, neutralized in the sense of everybody's sharing it. It's, you know, not sort of directed towards, you know, one particular talent or skill or group. It's just more generalized in that sense that I think it gives people a different way to interact and a different way to learn about each other and themselves that they don't really get in some of these more contrived, or again, if it's happy hour, I mean, trust me, I've been to a lot of great happy hours and I've been really happy at the happy hours, you know, but I also know that sometimes happy hours can have their own sort of, you know, shadow to them, you know, where they're maybe, you know, not everybody is drinking as much as they used to. There's a, you know, big shift towards, dry, you know, like mocktails and dry behavior. And I think also happy hours can sometimes lend towards, you know, work gossip or, you know, things that just, and of course, people are relieving stress and tension and things like that. But I just, you know, when I saw that, like, do social outings, it really stood out to me because I just had more questions than answers with it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, is that something that, like, businesses should be investing in for their employees?
Well, I think it's, like, I don't have an answer to that particularly. I the social outings, to me, my immediate response is, one, I don't like forced fun. So immediately, I just want to go home. Like, I'm one of those people.
Right.
Especially if, like, the social outing is around happy hour. If it's a smaller group of, like, my work friends, my work buds, I will go to happy hour with those individuals. But if it's a work happy hour where I don't like that.
You know, I have an anecdotal story with an organization I used to work for, and it actually brought me great joy. It was, like, one of my favorite things about this particular team. The organization was big and had a lot of divisions, and so holiday celebrations, at some point, they used to all celebrate together, and then they broke it up divisionally. Mm-hmm. And the one division, they would do an outing, right? They did it at the main event. All right. Everybody could play video games and putt golf and all that. They divided the teams. They divided everybody on the team into bowling teams. And they had this, like, it went on for years and probably decades now. It's one single bowling pin that has been signed by the winners and it gets to stay in the winner's office.
That's cool. That's fun.
And it is fun. It's like, and teams design their t-shirts. Like, everybody gets, they really get into it. They plan it for, like, weeks and months, you know, and, like, super into, like, their team names and, like, the way they show up and all of that. And it's really, like, I think that's, like, a really great example of it's done on company time, company mm-hmm. pays for it, you know, and but it's such an experience. And it's like the dynamic shift that happens in that experience. People are collaborating together that don't normally work together. They're being creative together. They're just doing so many things where they're getting to learn more about themselves and mm-hmm. each other, you know. And
yeah.
I think that's really a powerful, like, thing. Like, I enjoyed it. It was something that, like, really stayed with me.
Yeah. And it sounds like it's a way that you, like you were saying, like, you get to meet new people, collaborate with new people. And then, like, that's creating psychological safety at work. And I think that's a creative way.
It is.
To, like, build relationships. So I like that. If that were the idea behind, and not necessarily that specifically, but, like, field trips, like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, things like that.
That I would be a fan of that social, like, the social outings.
Do you want to hear what it said not to do?
Yes.
We've already touched on this, but I think we can, like, it said it in all caps, and I put it that way. Don't expect HR to do all of the culture building, y'all. Okay?
So, oh, my gosh. There's more people in the organization that could drive culture?
I put a note that says culture means y'all. Okay? So, like, it's, you know, realistically, like, I believe, and I've said it many times, leadership drives culture, right? Period. And I think HR people are great partners in culture development, absolutely, without question. But I believe, and we're talking about the employee experience here, every employee in an organization should be fully empowered to participate, create, and express the culture of the organization.
Oh, yeah. And I think that should be part of employer branding, like, that expectation. Well, first you need to, like, articulate what your culture is, and how it's exhibited in day to day at work. So I 100% agree with you. It's not one person's job, one department's job. It's everyone's job. To your point, leadership sets it and we all embody it. And that, to me, creates more autonomy. Like, already I feel empowered and I don't work at this fictitious place.
I think it creates the autonomy and it also creates the connection.
Connection, yes.
You know? And both, it's like, you know, a nice balance of symbiotic energy, right?
I'm going to say really quickly that I think the top hat is my favorite. With your metal jewelry, you're giving steampunk right now.
Thank you.
So I'm really excited.
I put it on as my like big boss hat.
So that is one thing. Is are there any others that like you said not to do? I'm curious about
it,
that.
So these two were, I thought, interesting to talk about together and juxtapose against each other. So it was don't tolerate disengaged employees too long. And don't tolerate poor managers. And all my very first thought was, well, what if your poor management is disengaging your staff? Is this an egg or chicken situation here? And, you know, so that was one thought I had. And then I have other thoughts on it too, but I'm curious how you respond.
Okay. Well, this is my little investigator brain. So in the article, did they list the poor managers first or the disengaged employees first on the list?
The disengaged employees.
So now I'm curious about like the perspective of the authors, like what the author's perspective is on like employees and management, because to your point, I'm thinking like I will have so many questions about why this employee is disengaged versus the poor manager. Like you said, are the employees disengaged because there is a poor manager? Like, why wouldn't that be on the list higher and then disengaged employees below it?
Well, and I believe one of our, I think it may have been Prudence earlier in the series, and she talked a little bit about poor management and this kind of poor managers hiring poor and creating that cycle within an organization. So there's sort of an accountability question there as well, in terms of, are we just blaming bad managers without really giving them the resources and tools they need to be good ones? Mm-hmm. You know, because I think it's real easy to say like, oh, I've got a crappy boss, or, you know, this person's not really performing or doing the job they need to be doing. But are, you know, have we told them really what that looks like, you know, and how they can be most effective in helping and supporting the employee?
Let me ask you this, because what you just said, like, sparked this question. Do you think that, like, as a corporate mystic, would you prefer that your hypothetical client focuses on the dues first, and then after they have the dues, like they're up and running with the dues that were spelled out here, then start to look at like implementing some of the don'ts? Or would you share like to implement the don'ts and then like work into the dues?
Yeah, I would stop the bleeding. Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean?
I would work on the don't. If you've got things that you're tolerating in your environment and your mm-hmm. culture, if you're tolerating, for example, poor management, if you're tolerating a demotivated workforce, and you know, I'm not going to be able to find this study, so you're just going to have to believe me, y'all. Okay, There was a study that was, you know, looking at productivity in the workforce, and it basically said that, you know, at any given time, 30% of your workforce is doing all the work.
Yeah, that's,
you know, so that means 70% of your workforce is disengaged or not, you know, working at least to the level that from a business planning, business operation perspective, you're anticipating or you need. And it means that 30% is getting burnt out and they're going to go away. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that know everything that's going on. So that's a super huge problem to have in, you know, in your work culture, if that is indeed what's happening. So I think that when we talk about, this is the other thing too, that I think is sort of ironic. When we're talking about poor managers, I've never known a manager that wasn't an employee. So what is their boss doing for them? Mm-hmm. Because unless you're the owner of a company and you're willing to ascertain your own, you know, self-awareness and your own capacity to be effective or to cause problems, you're an employee. You're reporting to somebody else, and somebody else has some accountability to your growth, mm-hmm. right? So, I think that isolating these things and saying like, oh, well, that's just like, there are times when people become disenfranchised, disenchanted for whatever reason. It may not have anything to do with the organization. That's a very real thing. People have things going on in their own world. My perspective isn't to sort of judge that from the perspective of if I can help you or if I can engage with you, I'm certainly going to try. But I'm also, I know that I can't functionally change somebody in terms of where they want to be in their own space. Mm-hmm. And so there's a balance there for managers of having to like look at a disengaged employee and determine, is there a way to reengage that employee? Or is this disengaged employee creating challenges within the team itself, mm-hmm. right? And that's just, that's part of leadership and part of it being challenging.
Yeah. And our previous guests, David and Justin from Blue Case Solutions, mm-hmm. they mentioned this, like actually having, and what I appreciate is that they talked about having, they, in their consulting, they do bring it all out to the forefront, right? In these spaces where, yeah, you're probably going to, I think he said that in Be a Better Team by Friday, like mm-hmm. sitting down with the two, the engineering and I think it was like the operations like leaders and really having them like hash out without yelling at one another. And I think that could also be applied here in like if you are coming across like folks that are disengaged, like let's talk about it. Because I think if you begin to wonder about it, you can put your own what you believe out there.
Put your own bias.
Yeah, your own bias.
Absolutely.
And it's like, I think a lot of it, in the reality of living in capitalism, I think a lot of things can be saved, you know, because uh-huh. people are then faced with the reality of, oh, yeah, I got to pay some bills. So I think that like that employee that may have like something going on at home, I think if they know how they're showing up at work and then maybe have a real conversation about whether or not like this project is working or could we put you maybe use FMLA, maybe you could work on another project, another team, like just having like those human conversations. So David, Justin, I'm curious what you think about employee engagement. Hit us up in the comments, man.
Yeah, it's when I think back on teams I've managed and you know, I've managed a lot of individuals, done a lot of individual hiring and things of that nature. And I can only think of one employee in my entire career that I just couldn't work it out with. Oh, that really? Person.
And that's just one, right? Just one.
Just one, literally. You know, like, I mean, to the point of, you know, many conversations where people are expressing stress, they're expressing exhaustion, they're expressing, you know, whatever, burnout, you know, whatever they're expressing is coming out. And as a manager, it's my job to be aware of that. And, but, you know, I mean, they're, we work with adult humans, right? I'm not there to babysit them. I'm really there to support them. And creating that trust relationship in a way that your employee is able to say, hey, I'm going through a divorce, mm-hmm. you know, and not only do I not want anybody to know about it, but it may take a few time, you know, a few periods of time away from my work schedule, you know, over that. And I've just never understood this kind of idea of like micromanaging employees to the point that we're somehow expecting them to completely like separate themselves from all aspects of their lives while they're like in this little space, you know, and at the same time, we want them to answer an email after 9 o'clock at night. And it's just that doesn't work. You know, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah. Well, so how can we like better center employees' needs inside the business? I have my thoughts, but I'm curious about your thoughts.
Yeah, I have crazy thoughts. Like, nobody ever likes my ideas. I mean, I don't think that sort of our hierarchical, competitive, traditional corporate structure is very value add for us anymore. I think it might have been at one time. I don't know. I don't even want to really like posit on that. But I think in this day and age, sort of that climb over each other to get to the top of the pyramid type thing, it just diminishes your culture. You know, and so I was reading an article where it talked about, you know, a CEO literally flipping the pyramid and like taking sort of the directive at that level, you know, like what is the need at this level? Right. You know, because it should in some sense, you know, the need at this level should really be greater. It's bigger. I mean, it's just like, if we're just like, and if you're serving this need here, yeah. right, all the way down, your need's going to get met. If you're the leader at the bottom of that, everything is, you know, ideally you're creating expansion by doing that.
Oh my gosh, did this company get reamed by Squawk Box? Because that sounds like it does not fit in with Jim Cramer's ideologies.
It's probably not. And it probably does not fit in with that, you know, but I mean, I think some of it is looking at things radically different and recognizing that like impermanence is a part of innovation and evolution. Like nothing is ever meant to be exactly the same way it was forever, always, you know, and except for, you know, maybe the mountains and the earth, and I'm okay with that. But, you know, when it comes to business, it's, we get so locked into the way things have been done. And I think there's also all this like fear of losing control, but it's sort of a joke because you don't have the control anyway. Like it, you know, whether you're on the employee side or on the organizational side, it's like having that fear of losing control as opposed to stepping into a space of empowerment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the biggest opportunities are to kind of create that culture within business, you know, whatever that looks like. What are your thoughts?
So remember that Fort Hays State University research paper I shared with you in episode one of our HR series?
Yes.
So I think getting back to the essence of the high performance era that focuses on employee empowerment, like you were saying, and actual delegation. And what was so substantial about this period was that business owners finally began to see employees beyond productivity. Mm. And that era, the high performance era that we're in today for HR, started in 1970. And we're in 2024, and we're still having conversations about productivity and profit. And I think that I'm a little optimistic that we can change this with the just feeling the climate around us, that not only are employees wanting change, it's almost like they're demanding it. Mm-hmm. And it's putting the business owners' feet to the fire of like, we got to figure it out. So to all the business owners out there, I hope that you're thinking about ways to create a solid employee experience and really look beyond this person that could just do something for you. And in our outside of work, in our social, sociocultural aspect of living, right? No one wants to feel used.
Right.
So if you're going to work and you're feeling used, do you really care about going the extra mile for this customer? Because you did the math and you know you're only getting a fraction of a percent of this money that the customer is bringing into the organization. And you're possibly thinking, and this was also referenced in Fort Hays State University, that I think in the bureaucratic era that the business owners were like, hey, we'll give you a lot of money if you like produce, overachieve, we'll give you more money. And they're like, no. They opted out of it because they knew if they did dabble in that, then the employer would expect more and more and more. So I think the high performance era, I think we're seeing that where we're like, oh, incentive pay. Yes, I want to like sign up for that because I'm a high achiever. I love what I do. And then you get there and it's more and more and more. So I think to sum it up, I think moving beyond, seeing beyond the productivity of this individual and tapping into their creativity, their ingenuity, like what can they, how else can they contribute to the organization?
In my experience talking to employees and middle managers, I speak to a lot of middle management people and a lot of upper level management people, that employees want to be recognized. They want to be acknowledged. And, you know, monetary recognition is critical and important. And it doesn't make it easier. I think in 2022, the CEO to employee ratio was 3.99 to 1 in terms of salary. So a CEO is making 399 times more than their typical employee. And so employees do that math. They do look at it that way, you know, and we're in an era right now where we have things like quiet quitting. We have, you know, these trends that are happening where people are trying to find ways to set boundaries, create value within their own space, empower themselves, you know, to be valued. But I also worry a lot of times that because of the, again, going back into fear and why people make a lot of choices, you know, that people get stuck in that space.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, you know, quiet quitting, I think, is a fantastic short-term strategy to redirect your energy into something else. But if you start quiet quitting and then you settle into sort of that diminished space, you're diminishing your spirit, your value. I mean, you know what your time is worth, and you're agreeing, you know, at that point that even at that state, you're diminishing your time and your value by just being at a lower level than you want to be, you know, and not allowing yourself to expand, not allowing your skills to expand. I talk to people all the time who quiet quit their job like 7 years ago. And now they have lost their skills. They're not able to move forward because they have locked themselves into a stuck position. The quiet quitting happened out of frustration and anger, but the fear is what keeps them stagnated and in place. And so I think it's really important for employees when they're thinking about how they empower themselves, you know, to look at the strategic choices they're making in their life and when it's worth it to take risk. You know, whether that risk is speaking up, whether that risk is leaving, whether, you know, like, I mean, there's a lot of different ways, but I think just sitting and being quiet and getting more and more diminished over time isn't really going to be a good long-term strategy for anybody.
No, that actually hurts my heart too.
I'm thinking about,
are they quiet quitting other aspects of their lives?
It's something to explore because whenever you're acting out of fear, you're not acting from your highest self.
Yeah.
You know, you're not really fulfilling your deepest needs. And so I think that when we are thinking about employee experience, there's so much perception right now around, and I know that we are planning a future series on generations. And I think that's really relevant in the employee experience as well, in terms of what different generations have experienced, what they perceive, and frankly, what the new generations are going to teach us.
Mm. Yes. So I overall, with this episode, the employee experience, I think a couple of takeaways here is that the employee experience is important and it also mirrors your customer experience. So if you care about your customer experience, you have to care about the employee experience to ensure taking care of them will ultimately take care of your customer. And two, the employee experience starts at the prospective employee stage. So think about your employer branding that you have on your website, your job descriptions.
How are they reading?
Please, if you have
Please use real titles.
With job descriptions, please give me a call.
Call Shaniqua.
Oh my gosh.
Don't make up titles.
Please don't, right? Because they will know when they get in the organization. So thinking about like the employee experience is from the prospective employee through when they exit and everything in between.
You know, and maybe we can close on this, but it is, you said it, and it's one of these things that irks me, and that is we should be celebrating people when they move on to the next phase of their life. We should not be treating it like it's a shameful event and, you know, walking them out quickly. I think from a cultural perspective, anytime I'm in an environment that truly celebrates their employees, they want them to be successful with or without them. Right. They're truly celebrating the individual and their own success. And, you know, like there's nothing that makes me prouder, like as a boss, than when I see one of my previous employees out there just excelling in their life. Like I don't have to know anything more than just that. Just they're excelling in their life. And I feel so great about that. And I celebrate that for them. And so I just think that's a lesson that leaders can really take to heart. It's like celebrating your employee means all the way.
All the way.
All the way.
Oh, Stephanie, this was great. I will say to our audience, if you are starting this episode, the employee experience, please check out the first and second episodes of our HR series, HR Then and Now and Education, as well as HR Friend or Foe.
And don't forget, our next episode is going to be HR, A Seat at the Table.
With Mindy. Yes. I'm super excited.
It's going to be fantastic. So stay with us because we have a lot more to come.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And also vote in the comments which hat of Stephanie's you enjoyed. Thank you. See you all soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to our show. Show us your support by following us on your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
You can also find us on Castus at fromelimination2innovation.castus.com. If you love our show, share it with your friends and coworkers too. Let's all work together to help businesses vibrate higher.